This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. State lawmakers heard from the leader of one of Wisconsin's 11 Native American tribes today. Ned Daniels of the Forest County Potawatomi delivered the annual State of the Tribes address in the Assembly Chamber. One of the topics he hit on was drug abuse. He called on policymakers to take a, quote, sharp focus on the opioid problem. He says it's hitting Native populations hard.
Opioids are tearing apart our communities. One by one, they are killing our people. They are leaving our families devastated and our young ones without parents. It should not be like this way. We need to continue to work to stop this devastation.
Daniels also touched on ending human trafficking, improving high-speed internet access, and protecting the environment, as well as the business and economic contributions of Native Americans in Wisconsin. Richard Ackley is a retired judge with the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Judge Ackley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Before we dig into some of the specific issues that Chairman Daniels brought up, a big picture, what was your response to the speech and its reception today?
Okay, let me put it in this context. This was number 16, and I've basically have heard all 16, and I have the address, and I have them. Let's be mindful that we affect 11 different communities. There's over 50,000 people across the state, and we have different issues, but I tend to take a long view of issues that take place, and communities will respond to the best of their ability. This annual State of the Tribe address, which I was impressed by, was the support that both houses and the chambers endorsed. The tribal chairman from Potawatomi presented the issues, but what I found interesting about the whole issue was tomorrow the chairmans will meet with various agency heads in the state of Wisconsin. So therefore, it looks like another year where these issues will be addressed to some degree, but I tend to look at it from a long point of view. And we have been at this for many years, but I really want to compliment how this first started. John Gard, the Republican speaker in 205, and a Bob Chicks, who has since passed away, Stockbridge Muncie, they were the persons who brought the tribal folks and the state legislators together.
And let's talk about the relationship between tribal governments and Wisconsin's government. Chairman Daniels started off talking about sovereignty, and he made the point sovereignty isn't created by treaties or agreements between the governments. It exists, and it's kind of enforced through these agreements. Can you just talk about a little bit about that, the meaning of sovereignty?
Okay, I'm a more legalistic. I would say the sovereignty is the context of our treaties. Where the tribe I'm from would not have the right to hunt and fish and gather if not Judge Crabb did not agree with the eufactory rights we have in ceded territories. So we do have the relationship with the United States. I've been reading a lot the last couple of months about and if you think about the American Revolution, very few people take time to understand the foundations of the relationship between tribes and the United States as a founding country. So therefore, tribes have a very unique relationship. And my friend who's an attorney in Oklahoma, a retired judge, stated to me, tribes just exercise a tribal citizen right, a state citizen right, and a federal citizen right.
Getting into some of the issues that Chairman Daniels brought up, we heard him talking about the opioid epidemic. He said it had taken a toll on his own family. This is an issue we hear about it facing small town Wisconsin, big city Wisconsin. Can you talk about what this problem looks like for tribal members in Wisconsin?
Tribes historically have had to deal with the addiction issue. To me, the decolonization process of Native people, what has taken the internal processes. Every generation, there's an issue. But what I find exciting is the tribal communities themselves are doing things. The little tribe that I'm from, even though I live in Green Bay, they have a needle exchange. I mean, they provide needles. They have Narcon kits. So every tribe has an issue of responding. And as a tribal judge for 18 years, we worked with the family. We worked with the coordinated services. So I would say that we're doing the best we can because these issues affect nationwide. And rural America may not be as close due as tribal communities because rural America is suffering a lot of economic issues that tribes are not suffering. So there's a serious issue going on in the North and across the country. How do we address these issues in a community context?
Another issue that Chairman Daniels brought up, he talked about some positive stories, including he said that Wisconsin's tribes' contributions to the economy.
We are far more than just the operators of casinos. We also own and operate a multitude of successful businesses that provide unique and important benefits for people across the state and country. This includes construction management and engineering companies, cybersecurity firms, industry-leading forest products companies, telecommunication companies, data centers, financial institutions, and agricultural businesses.
Can you talk, Judge Ackley, about that focus on economic contributions?
I take the context of economics to reflect if you have a standard of education, if you have you've engaged the opportunities that this generations have today. I think of my grandson who knows how to play computers better than I do, who does, if you think of source code. But on a more practical level, think of Red Cliff with its tower for allowing internet up in that region. If you think of Lac du Flambeau where they do, they cooperate. For years they've been doing this plant where they do some type of electronic things. Every tribe across the state has had to deal with what I call the urban-rural dynamic. You may have 50,000 people within the tribal communities, but there's an urban population, and they travel back and forth. So I say the generations and the opportunities today are there. Tribal members have to know their history and take advantage of them. In fact, it's kind of humorous. One of my friends said to me, make sure the younger people get the 16 speeches of the archives of the state of the tribe address so they can address those in schools. They can learn how to debate. And Rob, I think doing that, and then they see technology as a friend, not something to be afraid of.
We're talking about today's State of the Tribes address and issues facing Wisconsin's Native American communities with Richard Ackley, retired judge with the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you listen to the address or were you there? What did you make of Forest County Potawatomi Chairman Ned Daniels had to say? If you're a Native American living in Wisconsin, what do you think is the most pressing issue? The things he brought up include the environment. He didn't bring up Indian school mascots. It's a common issue in the news. Crime, something else. What do you think of relationships between tribal governments and state and local governments? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're talking about issues and opportunities facing Native Americans in Wisconsin. The annual State of the Tribes address was this afternoon given by Ned Daniels, chairman of the Forest County Potawatomi. Richard Ackley is with us, retired judge with the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Another issue that Chairman Daniels focused on, Judge Ackley, was human trafficking. Here's some of what he had to say.
Native women and girls are being exploited, trafficked, and subjected to violence at a disproportionately high rates. This is a serious issue and something we cannot afford to turn our eyes from. The harm caused by these devastating acts leave lasting impressions on not only the victims, but also the families and their communities. We need to address and treat the problems posed by human trafficking.
And Judge Ackley, we're hearing horrible statistics around the country. Chairman Daniels highlighting that problem here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about that?
I would say the coordinated context across the country, this is an issue that's affect North Dakota, Washington, the Ojibwe tribe where I'm from, Duluth, Minnesota, the Canadian border. These are issues that are taking place in a coordinated effort. And the best one can say in tribal communities is to be aware of who you know, who you don't know. And to me, Small tribal communities, tribes are very good at knowing who's who. So therefore, we have a proper response. It's been going on. These dynamics of have been going on for years in the sense of issues that affect tribes. But I believe that the more we're public, the more transparent we are, the more we'll be able to eradicate these kinds of issues that take place. And interventions now are being discussed and across the country. So to me, things are going to improve.
Chairman Daniels also praised a few state lawmakers by name for their efforts to create and fund a task force to study missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Are you hopeful that this task force could become law? And if so, what would you like to see it do?
One of the difficulties with tribal communities is to be too specific on specific issues. There are ways the state of Wisconsin and the tribes can work together. But to me, in the law enforcement world, if there's cold cases, whether it be Red Cliff, Lac du Flambeau, any place other, you make use of good law enforcement. You make use of good judges, state, tribal, and federal. In the state of Wisconsin, of the 11 tribes, we have the tribe of the Menominee tribe, which has a federal oversight. The other tribes have a public law 280 oversight, which means criminal and civil jurisdiction is shared by the state of Wisconsin. So I say the context or the format is for everyone to work together to eradicate these issues. And I believe the state of Wisconsin is a small state. What I was really impressed with today was everybody was cooperative. They applause the comments of Tribal Chairman Ned Daniels Jr. To me, I was impressed. Now, task force coordinated study things. In the 15 years I've been observing these State of the Tribe address, we have to respect the sovereignty of the tribe, respect the specific culture, and respect their values, and that's the way we partner to improve people's lives.
As we wrap up, Judge Ackley, as you mentioned, you've been watching these State of the Tribes addresses now for 16 years. Does anything stand out to you, something that's maybe improved, a positive spot over that 16-year span?
The positive is the relationship of the state of Wisconsin with the tribes, no matter what governor, no matter what legislature it is, because we have a long history and we all are going to live here and we have to live together in some degree of harmony and some degree of cooperation. I am really impressed by the younger generations, things that are taking place like Act 31, other kinds of things that have taken place. As a person who's getting this year I'll be 75, I see great things happening with the younger generations. So I'm just passing on what I can do, but in years from now on, you'll see younger people commenting on the State of Tribe addresses. You may find younger leadership, but it's going to improve.
Judge Ackley, thanks so much for joining us today. Richard Ackley is a retired judge for the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. We talked with him about this year's State of the Tribes address and issues facing Wisconsin's Native American communities. You can listen to the full address by Forest County Potawatomi Chairman Ned Daniels at WPR.org. It will also air tonight at 7 on all Wisconsin public radio stations. Coming up after the news, with celebrities who have been involved in scandals try to make a comeback, should we continue to support their work? We'll dive into that question with recent and upcoming appearances from controversial celebrities in Wisconsin. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Some celebrities who have been involved in scandals recently are starting to make their ways back into public life. That leaves a lot of people with a tough question about what to do about it. Venues have to decide if they should book the shows in the first place. Then it's up to the public to decide whether they should continue to support the person's work by going to see them. That includes audiences and venues here in Wisconsin, with recent and coming appearances from Garrison Keillor, creator and former host of A Prairie Home Companion, who was accused of sexual harassment in 2017, accusations that Keillor has challenged, and Roseanne Barr, the former star of the sitcom Roseanne, who was fired from the reboot of the show in 2018 after racist tweets. And a note to listeners, you may have heard announcements on WPR for Keillor's appearance in Madison last week. WPR was not a sponsor of that event, but his production company, Prairie Home Productions, is a business sponsor of WPR. Piet Levy is the music and entertainment reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He recently wrote about this topic. Piet, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, your piece is prompted by visits this month from a couple celebrities, Roseanne Barr and Garrison Keillor. Can you talk about their visits here in Wisconsin?
Sure. Garrison Keillor, who was the host of A Prairie Home Companion, and he retired in 2016, but is still doing some performances. He was at the back room at Collectivo Coffee in Milwaukee. That's a pretty small venue, about 300 capacity, before the scandal, I guess. He played at the Pabst Theater when he'd come to town, which is 1,300 seats. He also did a show at the Barrymore Theater on Friday in Madison, which is about 970 seats. And then Roseanne Barr, she's actually going to be coming in April, and she has three shows she's doing in Wisconsin over kind of a weekend. She's going to be playing at a venue called the Route 20 Outhouse. That's in Sturtevant. She'll start her tour there April 16th. Then she'll move over to the Gobbler Theater, which is in Johnson Creek. She'll be there the 17th. And then she'll wrap up her little run at the Crystal Grand Music Theater in Wisconsin Dells April 18th. And Roseanne Barr, too, is also a figure who's very controversial. And as people probably know, her ABC hit revival of Roseanne was canceled, turned into a spinoff called The Conners, where her character was written off, her character was killed. And, you know, this kind of prompted this story about looking at these artists in the last couple of years who have been, you know, quote, canceled, who have gotten some intense heat on social media or in the media from people for things, for accusations, things they allegedly did, tweets in Roseanne Barr's case. And they're trying to make comebacks and looking at how that process is playing out and if venues should do that or not, if audiences should welcome them or not. It's a thorny topic that I wanted to get into for the Journal Sentinel.
Right. These two happen to be here in Wisconsin, but this is a question that faces fans and venues. Let's talk about the fan side of things. What do you think is our sort of calculus of deciding, do I support this artist in spite of X, whatever X was?
Yeah, I think in the case of diehard fans, they may support the artist no matter what, especially if they have kind of this, I want to call it a blind faith, but if they are extreme diehard fans, they may still support those artists if they care deeply, deeply about their art. And that's where it gets thorny, too, is because we've looked at the questions of arts. Should artists be separated from the art? And, you know, I think traditionally a lot of people have said, well, they can be separated. And then it's gotten murkier and murkier, especially in recent years, especially around Me Too, where people are wondering, well, is it right to support the art? If we're supporting the artist who is, you know, did these things or accused of these things, are we condoning that? Are we accepting that? Are we allowing this to kind of happen? R. Kelly's obviously a big example where, you know, he was, there was a huge scandal, obviously, with him, and he was acquitted. So, you know, he continued kind of performing, and he continued getting written about. But now I think it's a lot different, where people are really kind of pondering and questioning whether or not to support these artists, depending on what they've been accused of doing or have admitted to doing.
And the support thing there, maybe it's one thing, okay, I may not like that celebrity anymore. I can watch a YouTube video featuring them or listen to their stand-up on a recording. Going to a show in person where you know at least some of that money is going right into their pocket, does that kind of, you think, raise the stakes for that decision?
I think it does, and it depends, again, on the circumstances and depends on the fan and how much they think about those artists, how much they want to take credence or not into the allegations, and what they, you know, it'll be ultimately up to them in terms of how they want to spend their money. You know, I think what we're seeing, though, is that in the case of this story that I wrote about, it looked at Louis C.K., it looked at Garrison Keillor, it looked at Roseanne Barr. You know, they're still not, because of the scandals, they're not really back to their full glory. With Keillor's case, he's playing some shows that are kind of at smaller venues and not doing quite as many shows. He's also 77, so he doesn't that may be an issue there, too. And then with Roseanne Barr, I mean, she did a couple shows last fall, and then she doesn't even have any shows listed on her website, but she does have a couple of shows coming up this year, including a few in Wisconsin. But again, it's pretty sporadic. And they're not necessarily huge venues. They're being launched pretty quietly. It's, you know, I think people would, from the outside, would say that they're basically testing the waters, seeing how reception's going to see if they can kind of push even further.
What has been reception to some of these stars with these scandals who are hitting the clubs again or whatever the venue might be? Has there been a lot of pushback?
Well, that's the thing that with CK, there was definitely a pushback on social media. When he came back, he had confessed to masturbating in front of women without their consent. And he said in his statement, in his apology statement, that he would take a long time away to listen and to learned from this. 9 months later, he appeared at a kind of a surprise set at the Comedy Cellar in New York, and that drew a lot of heat and scrutiny. That led to ultimately doing some more comedy appearances and then this tour. But there's still a lot of scrutiny around the tour. There's still a lot of scrutiny around what he's done and if it's really time for him to kind of come back. One of his accusers did an op-ed for Canadian Jewish News who basically asked the question, you know, what if this had happened to your daughter or son or your wife? How would you feel about them getting consistent hate mail from Louis C.K. supporters who tell them to kill themselves? So think about that. Think about the human beings encumbered in the story when you pat yourself on the back for his career resurgence. There's definitely a lot of controversy around this. And CK, too, is also playing at these theaters. He's, you know, not allowing phones and recordings, which has happened at comedy shows. That's growing more and more. But he's also not even allowing note-taking. And some people kind of question that, wondering if he's trying to have this comeback, but also minimize attention around his comeback to minimize backlash around his comeback.
Talking to Piet Levy, music and entertainment reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about stars who, celebrities, comedians, others who have had big public trouble because of their behavior, sexual harassment, racist tweets, sexual activity without consent. The list goes on. Can they come back? When do they come back? Piet, one place where that question has to be answered is a venue. Somebody owns a comedy club or performance space and says, all right, where do I fit into this? What kind of things do you think factor in there?
Yeah, I spoke to Charlie Goldstone. He's the co-president of FBC Live, which is a major, major concert promoter, one of the biggest concert promoters in the world. Technically an independent company, although Live Nation in early 2019 acquired a majority stake in FBC Live. So it's still its own company, but still has these, you know, deep pockets and connections with Live Nation. But I spoke to him for this story and, you know, I asked him, is this something that's being talked about in the live music industry circles? You know, when R. Kelly came back and came back for years and years and years without a lot of scrutiny, playing at theaters, you know, getting lots of articles written about him. I wrote about R. Kelly, too, and reviewed him even after that big scandal and before the new accusations came out. You know, that's kind of been left a mark and left a stain on the industry. And I was pondering, you know, now that we're in this new era, you know, in light of that, too, is there being more discussion happening in the music industry around this, around, you know, pumping the brakes if an artist wants to come back who's admitted to things or been accused of serious things? And, you know, from his perspective, from his vantage point, there hasn't been a lot of major discussion. And in fact, one of the artists that FBC Live had promoted, Melanie Martinez, she was herself accused of sexual assault in 2017 when Me Too really got really hot. And he didn't know that as well. You know, a quote from him that he told me was that, you know, we live in a lot of great areas, so we have to balance the reputation of our companies and our venues with the fact that we don't make decisions for other people as to how they want to spend their money. These are huge financial decisions that an industry will be making, and you have to be careful about making them without some concrete things, facts and things fleshed out. That being said, every promoter and venue has a right to make their own decisions.
Now, there's the notion that, okay, whether we're talking in criminal justice or our personal relationships, if somebody does wrong, they pay a price of some sort, they express contrition, regret, and a willingness to make things better, we should try to forgive them and let them move on. Whether that works in reality or not, I don't know. But is that something that you see happening with some of these celebrities, or are they just, you know, trying to jump back in without going through those steps?
Well, every case is different, and same with Me Too. Every single case is different, and the response to it would be different, and the consumer response and arguably the promoter response would be different around certain artists because every case is so different. You know, I think what we're seeing, though, is when there is a comeback, typically artists have to address if there's something that serious, have to address it in some way. And that's kind of a crucial first step to a comeback would be to do that. When you look at Roseanne Barr, she also said what she tweeted about Valerie Jarrett. It was a very racist tweet about Valerie Jarrett. She said it was egregious and indefensible. But at the same time, when she made her first statement about it, she claimed she was on Ambien at the time and she was, quote, Ambien tweeting. And a lot of people took issue with that and thinking that she kind of shifted the blame onto Ambien for her tweet. And so her response also got a lot of heat. And in subsequent interviews, she's kind of gone back and forth between being apologetic, but also what some would argue be defensive. And the case of Keeler, there's been some controversy around his statements as well, and whether or not he's really apologized enough, to the point that he was the focus of an article, the cover story for the January issue of Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, and a columnist for the magazine resigned because he was the cover story. She took issue with that because she felt like he hadn't really apologized, and she thought that you know, these men still get the front page, they still get the time and the attention documentation. I'm quoting from Norm McKerney. They do not have to be sorry or even pretend to be. So all these issues really have a lot of sides to it, and gets really kind of thorny. And we're seeing that especially in the social media era. I mean, we're seeing downfalls like we've never seen before, and we're seeing responses like we've never really seen before to apologies, to accusations. And I think that's what makes this kind of thorny, is because the public will – it sounds like the public will ultimately decide whether or not what an artist has done or said is enough for them to accept supporting that artist again. And for some diehard fans, they'll still go. But at the same time, these ticket sales are still pretty soft, to the point that, you know, it seems unlikely, based on whatever actions they've taken so far, that it was enough for Roseanne to get a TV show again, for CK to get a big production deal again, for Keeler to kind of, you know, play big theaters again like he did more frequently. So they might still have a long way to go.
Piet, a lot of food for thought. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Piet Levy, the music and entertainment reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's with us today to talk about the controversy around recent and upcoming appearances in Wisconsin from celebrities who've been involved in scandals.